2021. This is The Better Life. I'm your host, Timothy Lawson. Living a better life means using your veteran status to get an upgrade in tier status at the casino. This is a very popular promotion that a lot of player rewards programs have. If you are a military veteran, if you are a first responder, if you are someone they consider a quote-unquote hero or first frontline responder or first responder, frontline hero, whatever it may be, the casinos will often have some sort of promotion where you can get an upgrade in tier status. It's usually just a simple, instead of their base status, you get their second tier status. So MGM National Harbor does it. I should say M Life does it, and you get bumped from Sapphire to Pearl. Well, I recently went to Hollywood Charlestown in West Virginia. I had a day off. I was doing something sort of in that area already, so I decided to spend the day over there after I was done with my personal item, and I got this upgrade. Well, what's cool about this one, and they use the My Choice reward system over there, which is, you know, Boomtown, Tropicana, I think. There's a number of properties across America. Of course, Hollywood is the, you know, Ameristar, bigger brands. What's interesting about this one is not only do you get the tier upgrade, you get the points that come with it. And that, from what I've noticed, is unique. Usually you just get the upgrade and tier status, but they don't, like, give you any points. In this, they actually give you the 1,000 point tier credits that it takes to get to Advantage, which is the second tier. Not that there's really anything to do with them, but what's significant about that is if you are looking to get the next tier, the third tier, well, you don't have to, like, if you were in the M Life program, you would still have to you'd have to make up for those tier credits. While you have a card and your status is technically Pearl and you get those benefits, you don't have the tier credits to help you get to the next tier. Whereas with the My Choice program, you get those 1,000 credits, your 1,000 credits closer to getting the next tier. So I thought that was good on them. I liked that. Okay, I'm sure many of you listened because you enjoyed The Better Life. I'm sure there's a number of you that hit click play on this because you saw that Derek Stevens is on. I was very humbled to get Derek Stevens' time. I happened to just run into him when I was at Circa. I asked if he'd be on the podcast. He obliged, and we had a very interesting conversation. Enjoy. Derek, let's start this where we start all the interviews here on The Better Life. We needed to learn about you as a gambler, and we know that you are one. Do you remember your first exposure to gambling? Like your earliest recollection of, like, oh snap, this is gambling happening in front of me.
Yeah, you know, my first trip to Las Vegas, you know, I was still in college, and it was a summer, and a buddy of mine and I were in LA, and we decided, hey, you know what? One day we got to go to this great city called Las Vegas. Let's check it out. We had a rental car. We drove to Vegas, come in Las Vegas Boulevard, and we saw this hotel called the Dunes. And we pulled up and we bought a room. And I don't remember what the room was, like $14 or something like that. And we checked in and we looked around. We're like, oh man. And, you know, of course, along the way on that ride, had a great book to read. And we learned the secret of playing roulette, and and we had a system, and we were going to come in and bust Vegas. And lo and behold, that day, you know, the system was nothing but a martingale. You know, we're betting $2 on red. If we blew, we're going to bet 4-8. I think, you know, we did it a handful of times, and we made like $14. And what ended up happening was, we made our first Vegas investment right at that time. We left the table and we went to the front desk and bought a second day. And then we got to spend like 48 hours in Vegas. So that was my first gambling. The first thing I really sat down with for a more lengthy period of time was in at the Dunes. They had a little casino on the corner called the Oasis, and they had shrimp cocktail and they had a Sigma Derby. And I spent that second day playing Sigma Derby, and I guess after that, you can say everything rolled on from there.
Yeah. Sweet. So the secret you're telling my audience is the Martingale system isn't exactly a get rich quick scheme. Are you sure?
Well, I can tell you it works. It works a lot.
Yeah.
But it works a lot. It works well for the majority of people. But you know, and as you know, the law of large numbers catches up to every one of those people every now and then. And yeah, it's not a good long-term strategy.
Yeah. What are your numbers on the roulette table?
You know, I was never really, to be honest, I really was never too much of a roulette player.
Okay.
I enjoyed for a little period of time, you know, at Bellagio in their high limit pit, they had a single zero and you know, if you were betting an even money bet, like, you know, a high low, an even odd or red black, if you did fall into the green, you only lost half, but that lasted for a little while in Vegas history, but not too often, not too long.
I think a most recent survey showed there's only two roulette tables in all of Vegas that still have European rules. So, yeah, that's of all the roulette tables in Vegas, two is not a lot. So that those are, if you can find European rules, they're great to play with for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you purchased the Golden Gate in 2008 amidst going into the recession, and then you decide to build Circa and there's a pandemic. Are you just the luckiest, unlucky person in Vegas that both of these properties have turned out well? Or, you know, what was it? I mean, in both of those situations, like, how did you keep your confidence that what you're about to take on was going to work out?
Yeah, you know, I never actually correlated that. That's right. You know, in 2009, the whole economy collapsed. No, really, for me, it's a little bit before that. I reached agreement to buy the Golden Gate October 31st, 2006.
Okay.
And because that was my first casino, that's when my licensing process started. So I got licensed in March of 08. And then, yeah, 08 and 09 is when really the economy collapsed. Now, the fact that I bought Golden Gate, it really didn't hurt Golden Gate that much, because when the economy collapsed, it really hurt. It hurt hotels that had, you know, pro formas that were doing 300 and 350, you know, ADRs for their hotel rooms. You know, the Golden Gate didn't have an ADR like that. You know, an occupancy when I bought it was, you know, less than 50%. So what we ended up happening in 2009, our occupancy went up. You know, we kind of cleaned up a few things. We brought in, you know, some new slot machines, and really what's amazing, we actually brought in a slot system. When I bought it, there was no slot system. You know, every slot was an independent machine that spit out, you know, nickels, dimes, and quarters. Really, I never saw the big decline. You know, it was just you know, it went up from there.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Golden Gate is my favorite place to play craps. Of all of Las Vegas, whenever I go, I always make sure I get one session at the dice table at Golden Gate. And it is because the service is always so great. I have never enjoyed losing money at a craps table more than I have at a Golden Gate table. What is it about the environment you set culturally inside of your organization and maybe any influence you can see from the top down that instills that as a priority at your properties? And is that something that you emphasize at Circa?
Yeah. You know, I love the Golden Gate just because it was my first, and you know, there's a certain element where I spent a lot of nights, hanging at that end seat at the bar there. There's something special about the Golden Gate, something that really can't be replicated. I mean, the fact that it's the oldest building in the history of Las Vegas, the very first address with One Fremont Street, the low ceilings, you know, with these tin ceilings, it has a different sound inside of there. And yeah, and then we crank up the music and we have a lot of fun. The fact that the service bar is about 20 feet away kind of helps on the service side. but yeah, there's something about the Golden Gate that has just got this cool little old school vibe. And I love it.
How long? So one thing, you know, so I was in Vegas middle of June. And we're still seeing elevated table minimums. Do you think that this is something that is here to stay? Do you think that that casinos are seeing that they can fill tables at these minimums? Or do you think that there is a time after the pandemic where the low rollers are going to see their $5 and $10 tables again?
You know, that's a great question. But I think you know, there's some things that occurred in the pandemic that either accelerated the timeline of the inevitable or you know, potentially made things more normal. And I guess the way I would see it, and to be honest, I'm not sure how much I love it, but the way I kind of see these elevated table minimums, I kind of think you're going to see that that's going to continue to stay. There's a lot of reasons why. You know, the hold percentage on a blackjack game or on a crap game, you know, it's pretty low. And when you think about how many people it takes to run a crap game, I mean, it effectively takes four dealers. You know, if you're rotating, you've got your box man, you got your floor supervisor. They have to take breaks. You know, if you think about the cost of running one single dice game, it's pretty substantial. And dice games these days, you know, on a $5 minimum, that you really can't afford to run it, particularly as you know, wages continue to rise. So I tend to think that the $3 or $5 crap games probably something more of the past. I also think that the technologies out there have changed, and you know, I think we've all seen some of these pop-up craps games and some of the stadium games that are out there. It seems like those type of machines are now really filling in the niche for, you know, you could run a $1 crap game on some of these types of games. I was always a little reluctant because I thought that there's something about being at a crap game where I love to feel the chips. I love to throw the dice and maybe that's what I got accustomed to. But really what's surprising is the sheer volume of people that are playing on the electronic table games. They have been adopted by the consumer and customers like them. Maybe, you know, an element of the pandemic as well that plays into this. I think there's a little bit of a change in consumer behavior, not just in casinos, but I think in a little bit in everything. If you're able to play dice and you're able to kind of play by yourself, there's a lot of people that feel it's maybe a little bit safer and they enjoy that aspect of it. You know, in all the years I played dice, you know, I love the camaraderie. I like all the chirping and I love the energy of a crap game. But I think there's a lot of people that love the energy of a crap game when they're playing by themselves.
Yeah. Agreed. MGM National Harbor, which is just in my backyard here, had brought on stadium gaming where the craps get in. They actually have a tub that people can still go throw dice at, but it's just one dealer running the tub and then, you know, consoles all around. I imagine that's going to become very popular in the best of both worlds. You still get to actually throw dice when it's your turn, but you can enjoy the table minimums at a lower stake. Do you think as table minimums are raising and at $15 and $25 become more of a norm, do you think that's going to impact player development, that now your green chip player is the average player at the table games? What impact does this have on player development as table minimums raise?
Yeah, you know, I definitely think it will. You know, and like I said, I'm not really sure that I'm really for this, but I just think costs go up, all costs, so from labor costs, healthcare costs, you know, things like this, you know, the days of what a full crap table can earn, you know, it just doesn't cover the costs anymore. So that's where I kind of think, you know, at some point things change, you know, You know, at one point in time, it was a big deal. A Big Mac was 99 cents. You know, it's not 99 cents anymore. They you can't afford to do it. So that's kind of why I think, you know, with the future trends, you're going to see the electronic table games come in as basically the lower denom games. And then the table games are going to be something a little bit more special.
Yeah. What is something taking a closer look at Circa, what is something either as gamblers or as patrons of Circa that we're seeing at the property that is a direct result of something you learned or were inspired by at the D or Golden Gate? Like, what is something on like day one of Circa where like in the back of your head, you're like, I remember this from D or Golden Gate and we're definitely implementing this here, or this is a change we're making here.
Oh boy. You know, I have to think about it, but I can tell you it's more than a couple. It's hundreds of things. You know what I mean? I learned a lot at the Golden Gate that we implemented at the D, and then we learned a lot at the D that we utilized and implementing here. We learned a lot at our downtown Las Vegas event center, which is right behind the D. That was really a key element where we did a lot of trial and error and helping the design of Circa. So I guess I go through a few of them. I mean, I'll use the event center just to start with. You know, we had these outdoor events, we had these watch parties. People love being outdoors, and then all of a sudden we decided to add a pool to it. People love jumping in the pool and watching sports. And the next thing you know, we added a bar next to the pool, and you know, it wasn't anything really brilliant. It's just all of a sudden we just tried different things and people liked it. And I'm making this story pretty short here, but next thing you know, we've got Stadium Swim, you know, as a key component for us. You know, it's just kind of how all this learning step by step and what worked, what didn't. And really with the event center, that's when we were in our full design period of a few years for Circa. So that's a good example. You know, the one thing I could say that, you know, I really didn't steal any ideas really too much from anybody else other than ourselves. You know, I love the world famous long bar at the D, and I absolutely stole that idea. We made the mega bar. You know, it's 60% longer and it's twice as high. And you know, it's something that that concept, there's an element visually that makes me feel comfortable in the casino. When I see long bar at the D or I see mega bar, I kind of know my orientation of where we're at. I kind of like that. I know traditionally a lot of casinos were designed with a different thought process, saying, okay, let's get people in and then we'll kind of turn it into a maze or make it confusing. A lot of retail does that sometimes in grocery stores or sometimes in retail stores. I kind of took a different approach. I kind of like when I'm in a casino, I like it better the second or third time when I kind of know where everything is a little bit. So maybe that's a little nuance that, that we brought in, but yeah, look, Mega Bar came from Long Bar, and you know, when you think about things with the Golden Gate, there's a little element where I really respect and revere Las Vegas history, and really it's kind of maybe my love of the Golden Gate and being downtown and the Vegas history that made us make the decision to bring you know, Vicky, our neon sign, and really kind of celebrate you know, Vegas Vicky and feature her inside the casino. You know, that's probably something that maybe the Golden Gate and all the stories of that people had inside the property, we've had a lot of fun with. I wanted to make sure we brought, you know, something from the past and bring it into the now.
What, whether it's Stadium Swim, whether it's simply hanging Vegas Vicky, whether it's the big sports book inside the casino, what is something where you're like, I want to do this, and then it worked, and you're like, wow, that worked out better than I thought it was going to from initial idea?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I probably had an advantage versus some designers of years past, in as much as I could tell you that let's say 18 months before Circa opened, I'd be able to lay down in my bed and close my eyes, and I could walk in, you know, any door. I knew exactly how the layout, I knew how to walk to the restrooms. I knew how to take the escalators up. You know, you spend so much time on prints you start getting to, you know, really get your hands around what's going to come about. And then the reason we had probably an advantage is because of VR. You know, we were able to take all these Reddit files and turn them into these VR files. And, you know, I get to put a headset on and go into a big room and I got to walk the whole casino. And pretty amazingly, the casino was, almost identical to what we had in those designs. We were fortunate with that because, you know, it's all the last minute changes that cost a lot of money. So we really didn't have a whole lot of last minute changes. I had to make one change about a week before we opened in the sports book that included, you know, taking a few walls down, changing some sight lines. But other than that, we let it rip. So I would say, you know, we kind of expected what's happening to happen. And it's just, you know, it's great for me. I love being in the book, you know, on a football Saturday or football Sunday last year. I love being in the book, you know, just recently on game five, game six of the NBA championship. The energy inside the room, you know, people are coming up to me and saying, boy, I love that. It's better than being there. The vibe, the energy was great. So that's kind of what we want to design, and that's kind of what's played out.
I'm not sure if you're willing to answer this question or if there is an answer to it. It won't hurt my feelings if not. But rounding out a year on property of the property being open, is there anything that you would admit that you think you could have done differently in design, layout, features, anything?
Well, let me answer it this way. You know, our team knows I'm a pretty hardcore guy about continuous improvement. So, I mean, every day, literally every day I walk in and I want to tear something out and do something new. So that's probably some of the most fun that I have from a design perspective. We spent a lot of time on continuous improvement. I've got five good sized projects in the works here between the D and Circa. So yeah, that there's always elements where you think about, oh, I wish I would have done this. I wish I would have done that. You know, going in, you're going to have a lot of those items. You just hope that they're in the hundreds and they're not in the thousands. And you hope that they're not catastrophic. You hope that, you know, if you screw something up, maybe there's another way to compensate another way, that type of thing. And yeah, I mean, I would say I like the way things played out. You know, I'm still working on our audio system. I'm not necessarily fully enthused of how we're handling our audio right now. But now there's always a few little things. And you know, I know that in a month from now, I'm going to have a whole new bullet point list of things we're going to be working on.
Yeah. I will say the one improvement that I would recommend is a dice table and stadium swim. So,
you know, I would like to get a dice table up there, but we got this little spot and we got five blackjack games up there. And if we put a dice game in, I'm going to lose two blackjack games. And, I got a sweat on. It's 100 some degrees out. I just came down from stadium swim a few minutes ago to come to my office. My office is actually located directly underneath stadium swim, directly underneath the casino. The casino is literally probably just 10 feet above my head right here. So I just walked down from there and it was pretty great to see all five blackjack games full right now.
Good. I would be doing my audience a disservice if I didn't ask this. Circa has been the fun new thing in Vegas for the better part of a year now. Everyone who goes to Vegas calls into their favorite Vegas or gambling podcast with a trip report. And those trip reports always include a visit to Circa and what their thoughts is. And the talking point we hear most often from people who are downtown frequents is the sticker shock of some of the amenities that they see at Circa. And I'm just curious about the challenges that you and your team had, or the thought that you had to put into delivering strip-like amenities and that sort of quality while keeping in mind the typical downtown patron.
Yeah, you know, the downtown patron, that's a tough call because, you know, who is a lot of people ask me, well, who's the downtown customer? And, you know, my response has always been, well, it's kind of the Las Vegas customer. Remember the downtown only has 5,000 hotel rooms, a little over 5,000 hotel rooms. If you multiply that by 365, you know, you're looking at, you know, less than 2 million room nights per year. But visitation downtown will be 24 million people. So the majority of people downtown aren't staying here. They are, you know, staying in an Airbnb or maybe on the strip or maybe up, you know, up north somewhere. So really for us, you know, when you think about 24 million people visiting Fremont Street, visiting downtown, well, there's 43 million people that visit Vegas. So it's more than half. So really, who is the downtown customer? It's the Las Vegas customer. You know, we spend a lot of time asking people what hotel they're staying at. And I can't tell you there's any one hotel more than the next. I mean,
right.
You know, I can't tell you, oh, it's Flamingo or it's Excalibur. I can't tell you it's Wynn or Bellagio. You know, it's really spread out. And I think it's for people that like Vegas and have come to Vegas frequently that like to come. Everybody's going to want to come and check out the new place. I get that point.
Yeah.
So you get an opportunity to impress people once. But really you're hoping that they have a great time and you need them to have a great time on their first time. So maybe they'll come back again. But I'd say, you know, overall, you know, what we tried to do, we tried to still provide some pretty good value for the, you know, the amenities that we provide. I'm proud of our hotel room product from standard rooms up to our sunset suites or sunrise suites and our founder suites. I think our room product really stands out. I think there's great value. So, you know, I get the fact that you're always going to have an issue about, oh, something costs too much or something like that. But, you know, that's just kind of the way things would be. You know, if you didn't hear complaints, it probably means you're underpricing too much. And I can also tell you, like, you know, I had to borrow a hell of a lot of money to build this thing. And, you know, I also got a pretty good monthly mortgage payment here. And,
yeah.
And you know, we've always really wanted to try to give people a great value. You know, I think we feel that way and how we're building our Circus Sports brand with really we consider to be the best odds. We think, you know, the value in our hotel rooms, you know, the value for the overall entertainment level you get from coming in here, that's really what we're trying to, you know, hit on. And, you know, really that's a key element of a business. You're really trying to put something together that customers like and want to consume and want to enjoy. And that's really kind of what we've tried to do.
Well, I think you're delivering, because with every person calling in and talking about Circa, it's always followed with, I can't wait to go back, or I'm interested in going back. So you're definitely drawing people in with the quality. And, you know, we spent a good amount of time at Circa when I was there. And we hung out at Vegas Vicky Bar, hung out in the sports book. I was in Stadium Swim. I saw one of my friend's rooms in Circa. All of it definitely delivers. What advice, I'm more curious about the answer to this, not that it's applicable to anybody listening to this podcast, I'm just curious about the answer. Like, what advice would you give to someone opening a casino in Las Vegas? If like a friend of yours was like, if they managed to get a hold of, I don't know, South Point, or I mean, South Point's a really bad example, but like something, if someone got a hold of a property in Vegas and you were giving them genuine advice on opening a casino, what is like some general, like what's something like, I wish I knew this on day one at Golden Gate?
Well, there's a lot of ways you can go down this. I guess the one thing I would say is if you do end up being involved in a casino and you have an intention of being more than just a money guy who's flipping, you know, whether it's flipping real estate or flipping an asset, but if you have an interest in being involved and whatnot, I do recommend you put a good amount of equity down. It's not all debt, because things are cyclical. You know, if we didn't have the structure in place, you know, that we set up, which we thought was pretty ultra conservative, you know, we put 60% equity in. I mean, we didn't put 10% down. If I had to put 10% down on building Circa, we wouldn't be talking, because, you know, if it would have all been debt, you know, the money wouldn't have been there. Lenders would have seized up and things like that. So if you're going to be around for the long term, my recommendation is don't leverage too much, you know. Don't bite off more than you can chew. I would say, from a financial perspective, if I was giving some advice to someone that would be involved in a casino, you know, everybody has different elements of advice. I've never really taken myself too seriously. I think I'm smart enough. I'm not going to be a guy that's going to be hanging around Harvard Business School guys. It's just not my MO. I'm decent with numbers, but I'm also not at that level. I like being around people. And if I had to give anybody advice, whether it's the casino business or elsewhere, it is something I've told a lot of my guys on my team, it's simple. Just show up. You know, if you're supposed to be at work at 9 o'clock, show up a half hour early. If you get off at 6, hang around for an extra half hour. Eventually, you know, the more time you're hanging around, you're going to have more opportunities to gain responsibility and be involved. So I've always lived that philosophy my whole business career, is just show up. And if you just show up, you know, generally good things are going to happen. If you're not around, you know, somebody else could get an opportunity to do something. So showing up, I think, is just a real, real big deal. And today I can tell you, I don't see an environment, you know, I've never seen an environment where there's more opportunity out there for people that want to go in and go all in and work hard and really try to make something. I think the environment today is it's a hell of a lot better than what it was in the 80s and 90s. It's better than the 2000s. So I think the show up component is even more valuable going forward.
Yeah. Last question, would be mindful of your time. I appreciate you hanging out with me. One thing that we enjoy about going downtown, especially to the Stevens properties, is we know it's being run by a fellow gambler, and we feel like we're being served we feel like gambling is an important part of the structure there. How important do you think that is? Do you think strip properties are possibly purging too many of their customers by ruining gaming? Or do you think the strip is never going to, like, is it never going to not pull in the customer to where they don't have to worry about it? And I guess just the overall question there is, why do you think at a Stevens property it's important to deliver to the gambler?
Well, you know, I used to make decisions based upon certain criteria, you know, like the Golden Gate. Every blackjack pays 3-2. You know, that's something I kind of built that business up. And that's the same thing to a great degree that I do. I know we got a couple of carnival games, but basically every BJ game at the D is 3-2. And we felt that was really, really important, because I think that attracts the customer we're looking for. You know, for someone that doesn't care if they're getting paid 6-5, okay, I don't really know if that's a great long-term customer. I'd rather give, you know, people a good shot to win. I mean, at 3-2, it doesn't mean you're going to win, but at least you got a shot. You know, it's the same thing with how we set our slot hold percentages. It's how we're setting up, you know, our sports brand. You know, it doesn't mean someone's going to win, but at least you got a pretty good shot. And I always thought trying to respect the gambler was a key philosophy that what I wanted to do and in our business, because that's the way, you know, that's the way I kind of grew up coming to Las Vegas, you know, and I used to stay, you know, various hotels, you know, one hotel for a few years, another one for another few years and whatnot. Yeah, I mean, I think giving gamblers a fair shake is absolutely critical.
Yeah. Derek, really appreciate your time. I hope to see Circa Sports in the state of Virginia before too long. And I'm looking forward to the next time I get to chuck dice at a table over at Golden Gate, hopefully in October for G2E.
Oh, awesome. Thank you very much for having me on. I appreciate talking to you and all your viewers, and I look forward to having a drink with you at Mega Bar back in what is October or September when you're coming out?
October, first full week of October.
Right. All right. See you.
Take care, Derek. Always a pleasure talking to Derek. Truly humbled that he took the time to talk to me. And I was glad that I was able to get some of those questions off. It was important to me to ask some of that. Some other notes from my time over at Hollywood. One, a host introduced herself to me, which is notable, not because I was doing anything that warranted introduction from a host, but because I was playing at a $15 craps table and playing the minimum with max odds. That's what I was doing. She walked up to me, she introduced herself, gave me her card, and that was it. But I was surprised that a host even bothered with it. I don't know. Maybe after the pandemic they're struggling with repeat players. So maybe they're reaching down a little bit. Guy next to me was also playing the don't. By the way, I played the pass line, and I lost a full buy-in playing the pass line. I was like, yeah, I'm gonna have a little fun today. I'm gonna be with the table. All right, a little camaraderie. Let's cheer for things. Cold as crap. Had a second buy-in ready to go. Went over to the don't and crawled myself back from the dead playing the don't. I don't know. I still can't get myself to enjoy a pass line game by myself. I don't know how some of you people do it. But the guy next to me was also on the don't. And something that he was doing that you'll hear myself, you can bet on that, other people, when it comes up, we advise on this. Not that we want to tell anybody how to play, but when he was playing the don't, if it was a 6 or an 8, he called no action on that play. So if we hit a D, if we have a don't come, if it was a 6 or 8, he'd call no action, and so the bet would not go to the 6 or 8 for him to for it to continue. That is a bad play. Don't do that. All right. At least I advise not to do that. You're essentially giving the advantage back to the casino. Getting through that roll, that's the hard part for the don't, right? After that, it's more in your favor. So that's my 2 cents on that. Had dealers catch their mistake on the payments on my odds, which was nice. I was even watching. I didn't catch it. But they underpaid me by $20, and they after the next roll, I saw them chatting, and they're like, "Hey, we owe you $20." So it was nice to get that integrity from the casino. Overall, it was a down day. I played blackjack, which Adam Bauer and Mississippi Rob agree is the most joyless game in the casino. It was a free fall. Couldn't win any bets. Get the 21, dealer gets 21. Get 20, dealer has 20. Get 19, 20, dealer has 21. It's just, I couldn't win any of the strong hands. And of course the weak hands never went my way. So, big, nice free fall on the blackjack table. I only played it because I was there actually pretty early. I was there around 9. Craps table didn't open till 10. So I just killed time at the blackjack table. And, I learned to regret that. But, the blackjack ultimately ended up being in my deficit for the day as craps, was not good, and then it came back. So it was okay. I think I'm gonna email that host later today or tomorrow, and just thank her for introducing herself, and we'll see where that goes. I can't imagine this is gonna go very far. She's gonna be like, you know what? Yeah, no, I got more better going things going on than a rec player like yourself. The more notable thing that happened, and this was very humble, it's probably the most humbling moment I've ever had at the craps table. The guy next to me who was playing the don't, who was calling no action on a 6 or 8, he had a hat on stating he was a Vietnam veteran. And so we made jokes with each other. I mean, he learned that I was also a veteran. We were making jokes about being veterans. He, made jokes about being a Marine and stuff. We were having a lot of fun. And I mentioned that I had worked at Arlington before. And he kind of like paused, and he's like, "Yeah, I got a lot of friends at Arlington," and like that was a moment. Like it, Arlington National Cemetery. For those of you not tracking what Arlington means, Arlington National Cemetery, more than 400,000 people interred at Arlington. That was a humbling moment for me. I've had some cool moments on a craps table, both fun. But that was a profound one that I didn't anticipate. kind of put things in perspective. You know, it almost helped me enjoy that silly game that I was playing of chucking dice down a craps table and risking money on the result of a dice roll. Yeah, I just wanted to share that. All right, I'm going to wrap this one up. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Next week, we're talking to a Vegas newbie who has a Vegas trip finally on their calendar. They're looking forward to it. So next week, we're going to learn about that person on who they are as a gambler, because they gamble at everywhere else. Just haven't been to Vegas yet. So that'll be an interesting conversation. Look forward to that. On behalf of Derek Stevens, I am Timothy Lawson. Good night and good luck.